Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again to grab your gear, pull out your globe, and see if you can catch up with the All Over the Map family as they wander the world in search of that forever home. And today, well, it finds them in a very exotic place, a place that they've never been before. They're in an Islamic country here. Welcome, Caitlin and Michael Doner.
Yeah, we are in Istanbul, Turkey. We have switched, in my mind, from Europe to the Middle East.
That really is. I mean, that's been the historical point. I know a little bit about Istanbul and Turkey. I'll share a couple little weird stories along the way here. But it's always been, in its mind, is it part of the West or is it part of the, you know, Middle East? It's right at the junction there.
I feel like it really, the question gets answered on who owns it. So I think of it as Constantinople, right? Because this is where the Holy Roman Empire was seated and Christianity became official and creeds were written and our religion was finalized here.
Named after the Emperor Constantine, who turned the empire into Christianity here. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then the Ottomans, who I just had this, like, we're like, it's been 100 years since the Ottoman Empire ended. And I was like, what? Like, the Ottomans were still around in 1923. They had been an unbroken dynasty for 600 years. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I missed that on the timeline.
I missed that part of it. Yeah.
Well, nobody really pays attention to like 1400 till now, right?
I mean,
And it was a massive empire and it, at one time controlled the whole Middle East from that Ottoman Empire. And part of the problem in the Middle East, I had a professor in college once that I took a class on this. He was very well thought of in Middle Eastern studies. And he said, part of the problem is everybody, like Constantinople, everybody thinks the Middle East is theirs. Hey, we controlled it for 400 years. It should be an Assyrian or Syrian possession because the Assyrians controlled it, you know, 3,000 years before Christ or something. No, it's a Babylonian. It's a Persian possession because the Persian Empire covered all this. So at one time or another, various people have controlled these areas, and there's a constant feeling it's still ours. It should be ours. And so it exacerbates.
And I think we're seeing that playing out right now in the Gaza Strip with the Palestinians and Israel. Like, who owns the land? Was it the people who owned it for the last 1,000 years or the people who owned it for the 2,000 years before that, or the people who owned it the 3,000 years before that? Like, it's just, it's such an insane thing for American minds. We're like, well, we stole it from the people in front of us 200 years ago and we're never giving it back. So out of luck.
And imagine if there'd been three or four empires that had controlled America over the last couple of centuries here, and each one of them still, you know, celebrates those days, still wants to make Turkey great again.
It's still an active national political power, right? Yeah. Egypt, Iraq, Israel, like these are all active nation states that still think of themselves as being tied to a specific part of the land, right? And this is something that we've kind of talked about over time, is this, what is the relationship between our souls as individuals and our culture as a community and the land itself.
This,
our friend was telling us, there are like 7 distinct archaeological layers where people groups have called this home. And each one of them can literally find physical evidence of their roots in this same piece of dirt.
Right.
It's weird.
Right. So one example, I'm told, I've never been to Istanbul, but you know why I love this show is I've been an armchair traveler my whole life. I feel like I've been to some of these places. I've read about some of these places, and I think it's the great mosque in Istanbul. I forgot the name of it, but it was
the Hagia Sophia is the Christian name for it. Yeah,
and the Christian name. It was the giant. It was the largest Byzantine church.
It's still the world's largest church, I believe.
But they turned it into a mosque somewhere along the way. And is it a mosque? Is it a church? You know, I think it's just a museum now. But maybe they do actively worship there, one group or the other. But it was the giant symbol of one religion until the other religion came and took it down and said, no, it's ours now. And they turned it over. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine taking St. Paul's Cathedral in Rome and turning it into a Buddhist temple? Or a Muslim mosque or something here. But that's what they did, sort of to stick it right to them. Hey, this is ours now, and we're going to take your big. We're not going to tear it down. We're going to repurpose it and make it ours. And it's that notion that I think has been problematic in that whole area for thousands of years.
Yeah, we were just in a location, and I'm trying to remember where it was, but it was like every time the town got taken over, this was the first thing that they rebuilt. And it was like a oracle or a church, or I'm trying to remember where it was, but it was this one place where, everybody agrees that this is a sacred spot. Right. And as soon as you bomb the hell out of the town and take over, the first thing you do is reestablish your religion on this sacred spot and claim it as your own so that you get access to whatever divine power made this spot special. And that's first priority as a conqueror is to claim and rebuild and make your own these sacred points in the universe. And we see that with Christianity too. Like, we build right on top of the temples that came before Christianity, wherever we move. And so,
everybody does it. When they grab it, then it's mine. And this is a crude analogy, but it's almost like dogs pissing on something, now it's mine. Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to go piss on whatever you really value. And now it's mine. See, I can do this and I'm going to take it. I'm marking my turf. It's no longer got your smell on it. It's got my smell on it.
It's a fascinating observation of, conquer 101. Like if you're going to be a conqueror, here's how you do it.
And Istanbul wasn't just the crossroads between, it still is the crossroads between the Islamic world and the Christian world. It's where the two clash. It's where the two came together. It's where the two fought forever. But it was also when what I was always fascinated with, here's this giant, the Roman Empire splits into two parts. It's too big to manage anymore here. And there's the eastern part and the western part. There's the part from Rome, and then there's the part in Constantinople, and they split it in two. And then the Crusaders in whatever that was, 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, whatever it was, start coming across this area because suddenly they got the urge to go reclaim the Holy Land. This should be a Christian land, not a Muslim land. And so they send armies. And when they get to Constantinople, the people there are like, I don't think we really want your help. We don't really want you here. And they overthrew them, and they conquered the city. Yeah. Their own Christian brothers said, "Well, get out of the way!" And they conquered that. You're not Roman Catholics. You're Eastern Catholics. We don't like you much.
Yeah, the Hagia Sophia was Eastern Orthodox from like 300 A.D. until 1200 A.D. And then the Crusaders came and they turned into a Catholic site, which stuck for a couple hundred years, and then went back to Eastern Orthodox for a few hundred years, and then it went to a mosque. It's crazy that even when we think of the grand scheme of things, like Christianity versus Islam, that kind of thing, but no, the East and the West of the Christians were just as destructive to each other as they were to the Islam, basically.
Exactly. And I don't think much Americans, I'm with Caitlin on this one here. We don't study much of the great Eastern Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire. Mm-hmm. It was around for what, 1,000 years or something. It was around a long time, and it controlled a lot of area. I think it fell in like the 1400s or something when they finally conquered, the Muslims finally conquered it. Well, whatever it was, 1400s, 1500s, somewhere in there. But it was around for a long, long time, had a big influence on that whole area, Greece and everything. It controlled all these areas, Turkey and everything. And I think it's just a forgotten empire. I don't think we study much about it or know much about it here. Other than
it's interesting is the Turks don't seem to care.
It was Ottoman, for as far as they can remember. And even a lot of the historical things here, it's just these giant, 12-meter high walls that are still in remarkably good shape for not having been protected for literally 1,000 years or 600 years. It's just kind of a nuisance. Get this, knock it down, use the stones for something else.
Dismantling these walls to start building the garden beds in their backyards. It's fascinating. And they're and the other thing we noticed is, oh my gosh, the traffic is horrendous. Legendarily bad in Istanbul. On your Google Maps, you know how it goes to yellow to red and then black. Most of Istanbul is black every all times a day.
Don't move. Paralyzed. But frozen.
We just tried the metro, and the metro is not great either.
Transportation in Istanbul, you just have to know that it's going to take three times as long as it should.
It's going to take you an hour to go 6 kilometers.
Well, you're there at a very, really an inflection point in their history again right now. I really believe this because I don't know how deeply you hearing about or know about what's been going on in Turkey these days. Here's what little I know. We had a guy come through a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and he was giving a talk here in Orange County, and he was part of the Turkish opposition. He had been, his life was threatened. He had to leave Turkey, and now he's traveling the world trying to say Erdogan, who took over, is a bad guy. And this guy who took over really took over as a secularist. And he said, I voted for him. We all did. We thought he was going to, you know, keep us in the Western alliance, keep us in NATO, keep us in, bring us into the European Union. We were going to be part, we were going to tie ourselves to the West, sort of like Ukraine is trying to tie themselves to the West and break away from the Eastern influence, the Russians in that case. And he said, and all of a sudden he started changing, and he started supporting the Islamic parties and the Islamic position and stopping freedom and becoming more and more of a dictator. And now he is just like Putin or several of these other guys around the world. He's elected supposedly, but he's a dictator for life. And he's built some massive palace that's like, I don't know, 100, I can't even picture. It's like the biggest palace anywhere. And he's, you know, he's making himself this imperial presence just like Putin is. And he drove out all these people. He curtailed the free press. He did all these things here. And he started this crazy policy where that's led to this run of inflation, this massive inflation that they're having. What have you seen that? I mean, they say the stuff goes up almost daily or monthly or whatever. Everything just shoots up. And so
we've been noticing people are taxi rides are expensive even by U.S. standards. Like Uber is saying like, oh, this should only be 200 lira to get somewhere. And they won't take us for anything less than 600 lira. Like. Right. So they're just negotiating it for themselves, but even with American dollars, it's still expensive to buy stuff here in Turkey, which is just strange that, as they're having inflation, like everything is expensive, not just the lira is getting devalued, but the cost of living objectively is just getting higher here in Turkey.
So what's the feeling that you get on the ground there? Yeah, I remember when you were in Argentina and you were actually kind of depressed. You thought Argentina would be beautiful and tango and all this stuff here. We have these romantic images of Argentina, and it was kind of a sad place because they were going through the same thing, a lot of massive inflation and dislike with the government, and people were kind of, you know, just kind of you felt like sort of they were just quietly suffering through this, like, I wish this all would stop somehow here. And in fact, it's gotten worse in Argentina. They're doing some wild populist guy that's in the runoff now here, the ones to just slash and burn the whole government and everything here. Wild, crazy things he's proposing. Do you feel any of that in Turkey, or is this just a long-suffering world? Hey, this is just our history. We're controlled by this group and this group and this group. You just sort of make the best of it and go along. I always wonder in those
societies. It's been hard for us to connect to the locals because almost nobody speaks English. Usually we found in city centers, educated people speak English, but we are not finding that here. They say hello, and that's the full extent of their English. We have our landlord that we've connected with, but he's living in the United States most of the time. So he still has he's a dentist. I think his grandparents came down from the Balkan areas into Turkey, which is another interesting thing. Like, Turkey is definitely a melting pot. Like,
yeah, the Balkans, I feel like the Balkans here are really close to one another, like familially. I mean, he's like, oh, my wife is from Thessaloniki. Her grandparents were, my grandparents were from Bulgaria. I know people from Albania. I feel like the whole Balkan area, and partly because they've had a tumultuous, right? I mean, there's been a lot of displacement during war. I mean, during the 80s and 90s, I know there was a lot of that here. So people would just go wherever they could to not be in the middle of a war zone. And so a lot of them ended up, you know, in places like Thessaloniki or here in Istanbul.
And Turkey once controlled that whole area. I mean, that's how World War One started, you know, the Turkish Empire and Serbia wanted to break away and all these things. And
it's been hard for us to connect to the locals. Just there's a language barrier, but I think it's more the cultural barrier. Like, we've been in places where people don't smile. But as Michael pointed out the other day, it's like, this is the first time where we have felt genuinely unwelcome.
Yes.
Like,
so I was gonna wonder,
and it's so foreign because like the women do wear the headscarves, the
solid black, all you can see is eyes peeking through.
Yeah, like, everything from nicely colored headscarves with kind of conservative Western attire all the way to full on burkas with just the eye slits. But we'll also just say on a side note, this is the first place where I have felt the men as a population view me as an object. Like, I feel like I get stared at like a piece of art, right? I'm a very pretty object. But it's like, I don't get the sense that they are seeing me as a human, which is such a weird sensation because I have historically had fabulous relationships with men. I've never experienced sexual harassment or anything like that. Right. And so for me to be in a space where I'm like, I don't know that I am even seen. Like, it's not even like hostile or like harassment. It's just, I'm simply feeling less than human right now, which
You're cattle. In fact, sometimes they'll probably ask Michael, can we trade you a couple of goats for your woman here? You know,
right. No. Cora. I'm sure we can get some camels for Cora, nice blonde hair. But yeah, it's very strange. And
it's
I don't
a harsh
know
thing
it's
to
because...
say. Don't everybody's going to hate me now because I said that. But yeah, there's a feeling that you're just more cattle, you know, that women don't have the same. Aren't viewed on the same plane. The men, there's the men, and then there's the women, right?
And I will say, like, we're not into Arabic countries yet. I mean, you know, we're it's Islamic here, but and I'll say that I don't know that we've had any conversations or had anybody tell us this outright. It's more just kind of an impression. Right. So it's not like we've been, you know, told to get out of places or anything like that, but there's definitely a sense of it, a feeling of it that we're getting to.
And I don't know if this is compounded by the Palestinian-Israeli war that's going on, because that's another consideration is if we had come 2 months ago, would there be the same tension in the air?
That's
or
true.
Right. Is there pressure to be Muslim, like wave the flag right now in context of the conflict that's going down not that much further south?
Yeah, it's only about 600 miles away.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know quite what the answer
Turkey
is.
Turkey hasn't decided for a long time from World War I through World War II. It was the Young Turks and they were the secularists, Ataturk and all these guys that built the last of the Ottoman Empire, and they turned it into kind of a military dictatorship. And they were all against the Islamic image. We're going to be westernized. We're going to dress Western. We're going to lean towards the West. We're going to join the West. Then when that fell, that's what they said. This Erdogan came in, and they thought he was going to continue that. And instead, he's really embraced the Islamic part of the culture and elevated that. And less and I mean, because they are a Western ally. That's what's so strange. They're the only Muslim country that's a Western ally here in that sense. Aren't they in NATO? I think they're in NATO, right? And they wanted to join the European Union. They're a NATO ally. Are they really with us or are they not? Are they part of Europe or are they not? I don't think they can decide right now. And I think they're leaning more towards feeling Middle Eastern than they are feeling Greek and attached to the European side here. I think it's a very interesting time, probably a very disturbing time to be there because I don't know what Western, I would suspect Westerners would not be as welcome today as they would have a while ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing stories. My dad was stationed here with the Air Force in, I don't know, 70s. 70s. Mm-hmm. And he loved his time in Turkey. It was one of his favorite memories. This is where he learned to scuba dive. Mm. Like he thought the people were so warm and friendly. And so I really came into Turkey with very positive expectations. And I'm not going to say that they haven't been met. Like I do feel like
but there's a chill in the air. There's a chill.
Interesting. But yes, it is a little chilly. But the culture itself is really beautiful. Like we took a bus from Thessaloniki overnight to Istanbul, which was bleary-eyed experience. I don't think any of us got more than 60 minutes of sleep all told. And so we show up, we drop our luggage, and we go wandering down by the waterside, the Bosporus. I don't know if
Golden Horn is where we were. It's the
tip of Istanbul. So we go walk into the waterfront, and we find this huge boat cafe, and we go on to it, and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're looking over the menu. We try to order, I don't know, kebabs or whatever we recognize. And they're like, oh no, we're only serving breakfast. And I'm like, all right. Okay. And they're like, you need 3 breakfasts. We're like, okay. They brought us a feast that didn't even fit on our table. Like, evidently Turkish breakfasts are a thing. Okay. And they serve them until 3 in the afternoon.
And it's like lots of little dishes. So the reason it didn't fit on the table, it was probably 10 to 12 small dishes per order of the breakfast. And so we had like literally like 30 to 40 of these little plates, all with different things on that. We didn't have any clue what half of them were.
Yeah, so it's like piles of different kinds of breads and piles of different kinds of cheese and eggs and every dip imaginable, savory dips, sweet dips. And you just kind of dip the bread and nibble the cheese and olives, and it was magnificent. And we're seated on these like luxurious velvet couches. And there you see people who are like smoking hookahs everywhere. We haven't gotten around to trying
this.
This
is some image out of Aladdin in the lamps or something here.
Yeah,
we went to the spice bazaar today, and I just took it. Literally felt like we were in Alibaba's Wonder Cave. Yeah, like there's piles of saffron and cinnamon and cloves and roses, and they have teas, every kind of tea, and dried fruits that look like jewels, and then actual jewels. Like there's just this opulent, extravagant, very exotic quality to wherever we go that it's just it is. I'm like, oh, I see why we have these like images of exotic luxury that come from the East, because here it is. Like we are surrounded by it in all directions.
Always has been since the earliest of time. That's what they imported into Europe. They brought spices. These are people that didn't do anything to spice their food other than salt, maybe. You know, that it still continues in my parents' Irish diet. You know, that was salt. That was the only seasoning or spice we had, because that goes back to Ireland and all that. They didn't grow these exotic things that they brought in from the Far East. It's always that exotic.
Yeah, and they don't do alcohol. Like Islam doesn't really do alcohol, so everybody drinks tea. So they have these beautiful, like fluted mini glass cups without handles, which is warm on your they all drink tea. So the kids have started drinking tea with sugar cubes and. There's some really beautiful parts. Michael and I did a dinner cruise one night where they had belly dancers and the whirling dervishes and knife throwing and it's super fun, and gorgeous. So it's this balance of really being amazed and having our eyes open and exploring really fun and beautiful new culture, and keeping that sense of chilliness on a personal, individual level. It's kind of...
Is there a sense of danger in the air? I mean, I picture Midnight Express in that movie, the young guy. Wasn't that Turkey where he gets caught up in some drug deal and then he gets thrown into Turkish prison and it becomes a nightmare and all that stuff?
Remind me not to watch that movie.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know, that lurking underneath this tourist scenario is a repressive state, is a foreign land, is a Muslim country here that you don't want to fall off the wrong side, because it's hard to get back.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I don't, there isn't like a, there's not like a, an open feeling of potential violence or anything like that. But, but I have found myself like telling the kids like, hey, you know, like this is what you would do in an emergency. Like, more than we have in other countries, I think. Yeah. Like part of it is because I feel like we're so foreign. Yeah. Like nobody's like, it feels like almost nobody speaks our language. There's nothing, I don't know. It just, there's a, there is kind of a little bit of an impending, sense of that.
I get kind of insulated from danger and threat, like, because I walk around with Michael, and Michael is 6'2" and a big guy and knows how to handle himself. And I feel safe following him here. Like, I kind of gauge is the place safe or not by Michael's alert system. Mm. And I will say Michael has been operating at a higher DEFCON level here in Turkey than we've been since Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That was the only thing I was going to say. Baltimore is the scariest place you've been to so far here. Well, I don't think we should walk around here.
Yeah. I don't know that I would walk around much on my own.
Definitely not after dark. But like, definitely there's no way. Like, there's been places where, like, Caitlin and the kids will go for a walk or something, and like, it's totally okay. But not here. Nope. I wouldn't be okay with it. Yeah.
Well, all right. So you're in this very ancient place, this crossroads of cultures here. Any chance this is your forever home? Doesn't sound like it.
No, definitely not.
I do. We are going to go down to Ankara. We are going to see Cappadocia. I think that there might be some really beautiful spots, but I don't see us living in an Islamic country. I feel like the religion just is not conducive to women or Westerners. So, which is different because, like, when we were in the East, Hindu and Buddhism really open, like, totally fine.
You were ready to become a Buddhist almost, and like, they're worshiping the trees and there's spirits in the air, and you're like, hey, this is kind of cool here, you know, and very welcoming.
We could have integrated quite nicely. I don't think there's any possible way, even if we converted to Islam, that we could fit in.
And it's interesting because the person who owns where we're staying, and I went to his cafe and talked with him and his friend for a while. And like, it was little things like they started playing the call to prayer, like at sundown. And it is like blaringly loud all over the city. You know, like you can't miss it. But he had his guy there in the coffee in the cafe. Like, he was like, go, go, go. And so he ran over to, like, closed all the windows and the doors. And he was like, oh, I hate that. Like, it's just there's also a sense of, like, it's not just blindly accepted by everybody. Like, there's definitely, you know, there's a part of the population. He's like, I'm not religious at all. And
nobody hears the imam singing and, like, falls on their face towards Mecca and starts praying. Like, the entire city just continues going about their day, but there is still somebody singing rather cacophonous chants about 5, 6, 7. It feels like all the time, actually.
Don't they pray 3 times a day, 4 times a day? I forgot how many.
It was supposed to be 5 times a day, but I swear it's more often. I would say
it's probably 5 times a day. But it starts at 6:30 in the morning as well, which is a little bit.
So sunrise to sunset, and then 3 times in the middle. And inevitably,
remind you once again, you're not in Kansas anymore.
It's very true. Yeah, inevitably it happens right in the middle of, like, a sales call or a webinar, and I'm like, hey guys, I don't know if you can hear the imam in the background, but I stumble. Just give me some grace, because it's
going to go for the next 2 minutes.
Are you going to go down to where was Troy? Where was the legend? Did they think they actually found?
Troy is about a six-hour drive south. Okay. So that's going to be our next stop. Is going to be Kanakal, I think, is the name of the city that's just north of it. So we're going to go there, probably spend a week there and check out Troy. And then we'll head south. Like, Izmir is a big, the third largest city, I think, in Turkey, and it's on the coast of the kind of the western coast. And then further south, and eventually get over to Ankara and Cappadocia. So, but yeah, we plan on spending probably at least 2 months here, just kind of getting to see it all and that kind of thing. So we'll see how it ends up. We're kind of leaving our plans open at the moment.
But we'll see, or it may be a quick exit after some more encounters. You and me go, I think it's time to get out of Dodge here.
That's possible.
Well, fascinating. You know, that's really the first time you felt kind of uncomfortable and unwelcome, and that's unusual. You've traveled the world. Americans aren't always welcome everywhere. Westerns aren't always welcome everywhere. You've been in some pretty unfriendly places, Cambodia and some other places here that I wouldn't think you would feel warmly towards, but this one, there's a chill in the air, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not writing it off. We still got
another month here. Yeah, we can change our minds.
And we do. We always do better once we meet locals and we have dinner with them. And that's true too. Yeah, we rarely find our best experiences in big cities. Yeah. So whether it's Bangkok or Buenos Aires or here, like it's very rare that our favorite part of a country is in a huge capital city. Yeah. So. Right. So yeah, we'll definitely report again here in a couple of weeks and see what we found and see if anything's changed.
Okay, all right, we'll follow you on the map here and we'll breathe better once you've moved on and explored maybe sunnier skies here, safer places or something. Where do you go from here? You're not going to go down into further in the Middle East. You were going to go down to Israel and stuff, but. Right now.
Yeah, the plan was to go like Israel, Jordan, Egypt, but right now is probably not the time for that. It's kind of up in the air. I don't know. We have
COVID was the reason we kept things up in the air last time. This one, it's going to be war. So we'll see.
Yeah, we can't really go north too far from here because Russia. We can't go south because of Israel and Gaza. So yeah, who knows?
Stuck. You're not going to go into Afghanistan. You're not going to go over into Armenia, maybe, or to. The Kurdish territories in the far.
No.
They're all dangerous places.
Yeah, I think our family's already a little concerned about where we are this far east. I don't know. My grandmother passed away. I don't know if we mentioned that since our last call. And so in December, we'll probably fly back to the U.S. to do her celebration of life. And so I don't know. There's a part of me. It's like maybe we just go winter in Tulum for a little while. And then once the world calms down a bit, maybe. Restart.
Yeah, right. Because there, I think that's one of the things that Americans sort of don't grasp is that the world isn't like it is here. There are dangerous places. There are places that we aren't welcome. And as much as we want to meet the people and explore the world and probably can, you know, there are certain places and certain times you probably should just stay away and let things calm down a little bit. The Mideast is certainly. I mean, it could explode. I mean, if Israel really invades, which they seem ready to do, that's going to turn into a bloodbath. And what does erupt is it going to erupt further? Will they be fighting will the Hezbollah attack and the Iranians and the West Bank and all these things, will all these come inflamed? And then everybody starts picking sides. And Turkey had an incident a couple of years ago where they almost came to blows with Israel because they were bringing in boats into Gaza. That's what this guy told us when he was here a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And the Israelis grabbed one of them. I think they killed some of the sailors and seized the boat. And they claimed because they found weapons. And the Turkish said, we weren't bringing weapons to the Gazans here. We're just trading with them. And you seized our boat and killed our people here. And they're like, no, baloney. Yeah. We know what you're doing. And it was very tense there. So I don't know.
Who knows? We'll play it by ear and we'll see what
bring you along for the ride.
Bring you along for the ride.
Right. So just don't get on one of those. I don't want to see you hanging at the bottom of one of those helicopters that are taking off from Baghdad.
Get out earlier than that. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right. Well,
we'll tie the kids on.
We'll tie the kids on and come on, grab that's the last helicopter out here. Well, here we go as we fly out of the American Embassy here. Well, anyway, fascinating stuff here. I think you'll see more peaceful things when you get out into the countryside. I suspect the countryside is more peaceful than the big cities. Yeah. All right. Well, all that more fascinating as we follow the All Over the Map family and their search for that forever home. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine Field Applied Innovation Center.